This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good afternoon. Welcome to the Daily Digest on the Bigger Picture. I'm T. Xiao Yik with Sharmila Gunnison and Sumitra Selvaraj in the studio. As always, we have two stories for you this hour. First up, so we know our body needs oxygen to function, but how exactly do our cells respond to differing levels of oxygen? Three scientists have just won this year's Nobel Prize in Physiology or Medicine for their research looking into this. And the three joint winners are William Kalin Jr. from the Dana-Farber Cancer Institute in Boston, Sir Peter Radcliffe from the Francis Crick Institute in London, and Greg Semenza from Johns Hopkins University School of Medicine. And they were awarded the prize for their discoveries of how cells sense and adapt to oxygen availability.
I think I'm not out of place in saying well done.
Yes.
Absolutely. Because the most fundamental understanding of biology tells us that we need oxygen to survive. Well, we've known this for almost as long as we've understood human and animal physiology, right?
Of course.
So here's Professor Randall Johnson, who's a member of the Nobel Assembly, explaining it in his announcement at the Karolinska Institute in Sweden.
This year's Nobel Prize is awarded for determining how oxygen levels are sensed by cells. Oxygen is essential for life and is used by virtually all animal cells in order to convert food to usable energy. However, the amount of oxygen available to cells, tissues, and animals themselves can vary greatly. The most fundamental use of oxygen by the cell is to convert food to usable energy. Just as a candle needs the right amount of oxygen to burn cleanly, cells need to adjust their metabolic rates based on how much oxygen they have available to them. This allows each cell, and indeed our bodies, to efficiently and safely burn fuel so as to create heat, do work, and build new tissues.
But as Professor Randall said, the amount of oxygen available to our body's cells varies, and this depends on the circumstances around us. Professor Randall explains what exactly this means.
Cells and tissues are constantly experiencing changes in oxygen availability. As an embryo grows and develops, as muscles work, the oxygen available changes as the tissues themselves change. Cells need a way to adjust to the amount of oxygen they have while still doing their important jobs. Sometimes oxygen levels change across the entire body, such as when we go to high altitudes, and sometimes they change in very small parts of our bodies, such as when we get a wound that interrupts the local blood supply. This triggers an adaptive process called the hypoxic response, which in turn can induce processes in the body as diverse as new blood vessel formation, or angiogenesis, new red blood cell formation, or erythropoiesis, and metabolic adaptations of cells, including glycolysis.
So here comes the science. What controls this adaptive process to hypoxia? A key physiological response is the rise in levels of the hormone erythropoietin, also known as EPO, which then leads to an increased production of red blood cells. And this whole process is called erythropoiesis. Right? So the importance of hormonal control of erythropoiesis was already known at the beginning of the 20th century, but how this process was itself controlled by oxygen remained a mystery.
And I must say, I really commend scientists for asking these fundamental questions, right?
Yes.
And that's where this human curiosity, we keep digging deeper and deeper and we find out how things work at the most basic level.
And it's not just how things work, it's why they choose to work in that manner.
Yes, that's right. Yeah. And asking, okay, what if I do it in this way? And what happens when I, you know, put them through different kinds of situations?
And variables, yep.
Yeah, and so that's what this year's Nobel Prize winners studied. So firstly, Greg Semenza, studied the EPO gene and how it is regulated by varying oxygen levels. And then Sir Peter Radcliffe also studied oxygen-dependent regulation of the EPO gene And both their research groups actually found that the oxygen sensing mechanism was present in virtually all tissues, not just in the kidney cells, where EPO is normally produced. And here's the happy coincidence. So at about the same time as Semenza and Radcliffe were exploring the regulation of the EPO gene, cancer researcher William Kalin Jr. in the Dana-Farber Cancer Institute was researching an inherited syndrome called the von Hippel-Lindau's disease, or VHL disease for short. And his work showed that the VHL gene is involved in controlling responses to hypoxia. Mm. So then further building on their individual research, these three scientists were able to elucidate the oxygen sensing mechanism, which is, bear with me here, controlled by the VHL gene and a DNA binding protein called hypoxia inducible factor, or in short, HIF1 alpha. Sorry, I know it's a lot. I barely understood it myself.
It just seemed like a snap to understand.
I was going to say it makes complete sense to me.
Well, good for you guys. You've clearly visited a lot of libraries.
Mm-hmm. But looking beyond the cellular level, this understanding of the oxygen sensing mechanism has, you know, it actually has a fundamental importance in our body's process, such as our metabolism, our immune response, and our ability to adapt to exercise.
Mm-hmm. And that's what's fascinating about the prize, or the awarding of the prize to me this year, right? The research behind it. It's not just, so everybody, that the scientists are interested in the mechanics of how it happens at a cellular level, but the repercussions of their discovery then translate down to benefit you and I.
Correct.
Right?
What it means.
Yes. Yeah. And in this case, what happens is that we can exploit the mechanism to develop new drugs that can either inhibit or activate the oxygen-regulated machinery for treatment of anemia, cancer, and other diseases. Mm-hmm. So here's Greg Semenza at the press conference organized by Johns Hopkins, explaining how their joint discoveries could pave the way for new strategies to treat these diseases.
It turns out that because oxygen is so critical to life, many of the common human diseases have derangements in the ability to maintain proper oxygen levels. So, for example, in a cancer, the cancer cells divide very rapidly, consume a lot of oxygen, and the cancer cells become very hypoxic. And what we've learned is that when they become hypoxic, they turn on genes that enable them to invade, metastasize, and spread throughout the body. And whereas most of the chemotherapy drugs are designed to kill dividing cells that are well oxygenated, there are no treatments that are approved to treat the hypoxic cells within the cancer. And we believe it's these cells that survive the therapy and come back and kill the patient. So one of our major goals is to try to identify drugs that will inhibit HIF activity as an addition to existing cancer therapies, and we hope that that will help to improve outcome in a number of solid cancers, where once the cancer has metastasized, there aren't really effective therapies. Then on the other side is the cardiovascular disease, where the blood vessels, for example, in the heart can become narrowed, reducing the blood flow to the heart, causing the heart to have ischemia, which is injury due to the lack of oxygen. And this, of course, can ultimately result in a heart attack. And we know that the hypoxia-inducible factors stimulate new blood vessel growth. They stimulate the remodeling of blood vessels to increase flow to tissue. And so we hope that there may be the possibility for new therapies to increase the perfusion of ischemic tissue in diseases like coronary heart disease, and also limb ischemia, which is a major problem, particularly in diabetics, leading to, in some cases, limb amputation. And so there are a number of disorders where we hope to make an impact. The one that's going to occur first, I think, is chronic kidney disease, where individuals with chronic kidney disease cannot make EPO, and as a result, they are anemic. They originally, of course, required blood transfusions. and often came down with transfusion-associated viral illnesses like AIDS and hepatitis. When EPO was cloned, it was possible to generate the EPO protein in the lab, and that's now given by injection. There are drugs now that are in clinical trials that will induce HIF activity, and these drugs can be delivered as a pill. So this will be, I think, a major advance in the treatment of anemia, and there are over 25,000 people in clinical trials now for these drugs. So I suspect that one or more of these drugs may be approved in the next year or so.
Not to wail on the major advancement or anything like that, but you know that what everyone really wanted to know was what their reaction was of when course. They received the call from the Nobel Committee. Rumor has it that Semenza had been sleeping and that he missed the call. Here he is addressing that rumor.
Yeah, I'm a deep sleeper, so I did wake up eventually, but by the time I got to the phone, it was too late. And so I said to myself, oh, boy, I wonder if this is somebody's idea of a bad joke. So I went back to sleep, or tried to, and it was quite a few minutes. I think they were debating whether to call me back or not, but fortunately they did, and I was a little faster to the phone the second time around. So,
as they say, history was made. Well, this is a week for the Nobel Prizes.
Yes.
Yesterday, the Nobel Prize in Physics was announced and awarded to three researchers as well. James Peebles from Princeton University, USA. Mm-hmm. Michelle Mayor, I think, from the University of Geneva. And Didier Queloz, I'm mangling their names, I'm so sorry. Also from University of Geneva. And he's also at the University of Cambridge. And they were awarded for both the theoretical discoveries in physical cosmology and also for the discovery of an exoplanet orbiting a solar-type star. Mm. And we've talked about exoplanets.
Yes, I thought it sounded familiar.
Yes. We're a little ahead of the curve here.
Oh, yes.
So if you want to listen to those shows, just search for Space and the Daily Digest on BFM.my for these podcasts. Mm. And we'll be keeping an eye on the rest of the Nobel Prize winners to be announced.
Yeah. Yeah, especially, yep. I think, well, for me, the Nobel Prize in Literature last year, of course, very famously, the Literature Prize was deferred or cancelled.
Yeah, because of a controversy. One of the judges' husbands was caught up in a sexual harassment scandal.
That's right.
And then through a fairly complicated chain of events, the entire award was withheld last year.
Yep. So apparently they are planning on announcing two winners this year. I'm plumping for Murakami as one of them. I know Sharmila's not too fond of that.
I'm not a huge Murakami fan, as I've admitted on various other shows before. But, well, I mean, his name has been coming up for years and years and years. So maybe they'll finally just award it to him and we can move on.
That's the rationale behind winning a Nobel Prize.
Give it to the man already.
And there's also chemistry, the Peace Prize, of course,
of course.
Economics Prize as well. So we'll be keeping an eye on those developments. Mm-hmm. If you have any thoughts to share about the Nobel Prizes, or if you want to tell us who you think is going to win, let's say the Literature Prize or the Peace Prize, you can tweet us at BFM Radio, WhatsApp us at 018-789-8899. We'll be back with our second story after a few messages. But first, here's Curtis Mayfield with We're a Winner, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.